All right, we're going to hop over here to provide a little insight. We had a question earlier about social media, so I'm going to dive a little deeper now on why social media matters to search, right? We talked about this kind of topical authority signal, and this is this balance of how many people are following you versus how many people you're following. The search engines want real-time information. We want it fast, we want it factual, we want it now from trusted sources. Social gives us a lot of that late-breaking information almost instantly. Right? You can point to Twitter as a perfect example of this. The Arab Spring, everything that happened in that area of the world was carried on Twitter. You know what? News services can't keep up with that type of flow. That is really important to a search engine, because when someone comes in and does a search with us, they expect us to have that information instantaneously. There's no leeway for us. We can't wait for a random news site to get a reporter over to record something, to put that information up. Not something very local and close to home that happened to us here in the Pacific Northwest recently was a section of a bridge collapsed on the I-5 highway, major corridor connecting our region to the United or to Canada and the United States, and really affected a lot of people. Thankfully, minimal injuries, everybody was okay in the end of it, but most of us found out about it, and most of us got the most information socially. The reality with this is that social engagement was happening from people standing next to the bridge telling us what was going on, while the news services and the helicopters were reporting the same information for hours on end while they tried to get a reporter to the scene to talk to the first responders. So that social media, fast. It comes to us really quick, and that's why we love it. Those integrated signals that you start seeing as well, and you'll see these in the search results. If you're logged in, even if you're not logged in, you will see clues in our search results where social is playing a role. You may see a small up arrow next to something because it's trending in Twitter. If you're logged in and your friends are involved, they will actually, if they've liked something, then we will show that to you and there'll be a little thumb next to it. And when you roll over the thumb, you'll see them sitting there, their picture from Facebook, telling you they like this item. And so those things will actually influence your reaction to click on something. So if you think about that as a business, you will think about this and say, wow, you know what? If I influence people socially and they engage with me socially, then the people they then are connected to will see me in a positive context. So it's that kind of, if you tell two people, they tell two people, and so on. And these signals are coming in all the time to us. They're constant, they never stop, but they are only a few of the signals that we are actually looking for. Now, I have a question posed here. I invest in Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, but can do search for my content. What could be the possible reason? I'm not entirely understanding the context of this question, so if you can provide us with more context, that would be very helpful. What I'm going to do is take a shot at it and see if I can get this answer for you. If not, fire another question and we'll pull it up there. So it's excellent that you're investing in Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, that you're sharing information in these areas. And I'm going to assume you don't mean you're an investor in Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, but that you're putting time into managing these areas. And if that is the case, that is excellent. You're building great relationships. And when you do a search for something, this does take time, right? What you're looking for is not just you post on Twitter, you post on Facebook, you post on LinkedIn, therefore you should rank more. You're looking for engagement. So you need to find ways to get people to engage with you in those locations. Retweet you on Twitter. Talk about you and engage with you on Facebook. Share things from LinkedIn. That will then send us signals, and your content will be more valuable to us. We're more likely to showcase it. So if you're investing in those areas, but you're not seeing any kind of real lift from anything, could simply be that the engagement is low. You want to look for things that are called hooks. Now, hooks are, I talked a little bit about this earlier, but I'll explain it in a little more detail here. A hook is a concept that gets someone's attention, brings them in. It's like a headline in a newspaper. And the way you use these things, you have to be very careful with them, is you will look for a humor hook. You make a joke, people find you funny, they like that, they stay engaged with you. You will use the contrarian hook. Wow, Dwayne, I think that's a great perspective, but I disagree with it. Here's what I think. And when people see you being contrary with expert thinkers, they want to find out what's going to happen. It's like, is there going to be a fight here? Or, you know, at the very least, we get some really thoughtful commentary going on. You will have the anger hook. You're just upset about something. I can't believe this happened. We shouldn't stand for this. Everybody, write your congressman. Those things will actually get people to engage with you. And what you will find by trying different hooks is that different people engage with different hooks. So a part of your audience will segment because they like when you're funny. Part of your audience will segment because they like when you're angry. Another part of your audience will like when you're being contrary. Another part of the audience will like when you put on your tinfoil hat. You will then find out that these different groups can be moved around and activated by how you interact with them. So if you have something, a topic you want to talk about, and you think, wow, you know what? This is a really feel-good story, but I think it will get a lot more play if I kind of put a headline on it that's a bit controversial. And it could be taken two ways. I know how people will take it, and that will really drive eyeballs. But the reality is, this is how I mean it, and then they'll get it, and they'll be okay with it. You can explore those opportunities. So that's really what you want to look at when you try to drive that engagement in those social spaces. All right. Now, really important for businesses as well. Oh, we have another follow-on question here. Can you speak about broader brand social connections versus individual content updates? What's more useful for brands? All right, so with brands, you're kind of in a different space, right? Brands have this, there's a bit of a luxury with brands because there's an affinity, there's a gravity around them already. There's, you know, products and services that naturally come to mind when I'm shopping for something or thinking about something that I will associate with a particular brand. For me, recently, I went to buy a pair of binoculars. I had it in my head, the only place I could buy binoculars was at Cabela's. So I went to the local Cabela's store, and that's it. Bought my binoculars, I'm a happy camper. I could have got binoculars anywhere, but that's what comes to my mind when I think about that stuff. So when we talk about these situations, right, with brands, it's all about building that connectivity and that relationship and making sure that you show people that you are of the people. That is a critical step. You know, Xbox actually set a world's Guinness record for customer service a few years back because they had their staff 24/7 responding on Twitter to any customer service support. So imagine you're in a game on Xbox, something happens, anything at all. The first thing you do is grab your phone, tweet, OMG, Xbox, this is crap, this just happened, this froze up, I can't believe this. Within 2 minutes, you're going to get a response back from Xbox saying, hi, this is Drew. I'm customer support. Describe what happened. I'll help you fix it. That is the type of customer service engagement that wins awards. And it did. Every business is capable of engaging with people at this level. You have to plan for it. It does take time and resourcing. You know, Comcast is a great example of this. They had an employee who was sick of the fact that their brand kept taking a beating on customer service. Everybody likes to complain about their cable company. Everybody likes to complain about their cellular provider. Everybody likes to complain about every business. But this employee said, I've had enough. And he started on his own time responding to people on Twitter and dealing with them one-on-one. And that ended up growing into an actual job for him and then an ethos of customer service at Comcast. And even to this day, if I have a problem in my own home and I contact at Comcast Cares, within seconds I get a response from somebody on Twitter telling me, how to deal with the problem, they're aware of the problem, asking me for my patience, taking care of me, or if they know there's a big problem, telling me right up front, Dwayne, we're gonna give you a credit, we know there's a problem there, thanks for your patience. So when it comes to brands using social, it's a really great way to engage people. It's also a really great way to kind of like test new ideas and try things on for size. I watched an author once do this. They wrote a book in the open and used a blog and the followers of the blog to edit every single chapter before the book was released at the bookstore. And they did this. Their publisher didn't want to do it because the idea from the publisher's angle is you don't release anything until the book is live and ready to go. Their idea was, let's crowdsource the construction of this book. We will have a much better product. When the book was released, it hit the bestseller list in the first week. It was fantastic. It was clearly the right way to do this. And so a lot of brands will do this. They will turn to social media and say, hey, if you're following us socially, you get access to this information sooner, faster, deeper, more of it, contests only for you. And the people that aren't following socially are not a part of that crowd. It is an excellent way to build affinity, is an excellent way to still continue to push information to folks and yet still have them engaged with you. Social media is about building relationships. It's not about direct sales. So if you try to use it for direct selling, that can backfire on you. People will tune you out. Yeah, I know I can buy from you, but I don't necessarily want to buy from you right now. I'm going to stop listening to what you have to say. And you don't want that. You want to continually bring that value, bring that usefulness to them. brands are uniquely situated in that scenario because they can bring things that matter at a larger scale and often influence people's lives in really deep and meaningful ways. You know, knowing my local cupcake store is talking about the latest in gluten-free baking technologies, yeah, that's great, and it's fascinating and useful, but it doesn't necessarily change my life. It doesn't rock my world. However, when I'm shopping for new tires for my car, knowing that if I'm a member of an affinity program gets me a $200 discount, you know what? That's important to me, because when I go and buy that product, that $200 is better off in my product, in my pocket, than in the business's pocket. As a consumer, that's how I'm thinking. So, from a small business perspective, this still pays huge dividends, because social can be what builds your brand. You can build a brand understanding that it's built around how people amplify you socially and makes your brand. You can be, you're well known for customer service, you're well known for unique products, you're well known in your niche, and you are the name on the tip of everyone's tongue on that topic. And even though you're not necessarily household, you're getting there. At the very least, you're inside the fence, and that counts. Now, businesses need to make sure that when they're building themselves out, they take a broad view of things. And we talked about earlier moving away from M.dot domains and these kinds of things. Now I'm going to talk a little bit more about how mobile is changing how people are interacting with search. You know, mobile is really making a difference. It's really changing what we consider to be search. And we see this at the search engine all the time. You can actually use phones now, take a photo of something, and then send that off for a search. And searches can happen based on the image versus you typing anything in. Voice-activated search, it's all the rage right now. Everything is out there for it. Pretty much every smartphone and device is enabled to do this. I can walk into my living room and say, Xbox, pizza, and it will go find me a local pizzeria and connect me with them if I want, and I can order pizza that way. Search is really changing. And it's now often, too, about gestures. You know, the example you see on the screen here is an actual Windows phone. And the app that's being shown here is called Nokia's City Lens. It's an awesome app. Uses the camera on the phone and shows me businesses that it knows are in front of me. So it knows where I'm physically located, it knows the businesses that are around me, and it's going to show me a range of options, because all I've done is open the app at this point. So it's showing me entertainment, it's showing me food, it's showing me shopping. It's also pulling in information related to the ratings of these things. So again, this is a social area. So we're talking about ratings for Yelp, for example, for a lot of restaurants. We're pulling that data in, it's being incorporated into the app and shown to the searcher. And then we're sitting back saying, as a searcher, what do I want? Well, I'm looking for lunch. And really what I want is I want a good lunch at a reasonable price. So I'm looking at this example saying, I think the wine cellar is what I want. It's close to me, it's got the highest ratings, let's go. And when I tap on that app, when I tap on that screen, that becomes my search. My gesture, my tap, is the search action. What I've done is told the application, I want to search for more information about the restaurant called Wine Cellar that's nearby. Then the search application brings back name, address, phone number, open table link, do you want to book a table, what's available, here's a link to the menu, and so on. That is changing the face of search, especially in the local area, in the local search space. It's really changing it.
Dwayne, quick question.
Yeah.
Just wanted to set this up because I think you're going to talk about this in a minute.
Yes.
But a question from the field out there is it possible to see SEO rank? That way we can check to see if something we're doing is actually impacting the results.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a great question, gang. I know this is an SEO. Like, when I do the work, did it actually make a difference for me? There are a couple of caveats. First and foremost, the search engine, we need to protect ourselves from spammers. So obviously, if we gave you a one-for-one, people would take advantage of that. We have to protect against that. So probably the best way to do this is, again, inside the Webmaster Tools, what you will find is we actually will show you your ranking. We will show you whether you've moved up or down against a keyword. So you can use that as a proxy to understand, when I've done this work, I saw on this keyword, I ranked higher and I got more clicks. And so you can build a map of that for yourself. And that's a really important thing to understand. There's no easy button for this. There's no easy tool that says, ah, I see you changed this word, and therefore we've given you two extra advances up the rank stack. That will never exist. However, using the data we provide inside the tools can give you a good proxy for understanding this. What is critical about this, though, guys, and this is an awesome question because it brings this point forward. What's critical, though, is managing your work. If you sit down and say, all right, I have 10 things to do and I'm going to do them all on Monday and Tuesday, okay, it's going to take time for those changes to take effect, right? And so you may actually see a big jump in your rankings, but you won't be able to go back and point to, it was number 7 that did that. That's not possible. And so you, as we see those changes happening, it takes time for all of those changes to accrue. And so the best way to do this, again, focus on your content, focus on usability, and focus on making sure you have that excellent experience for people. Engage them socially, wow them on your website, make it so good they can't help but share that with people. When you do that and you stay focused on it, you will see over time your traffic will increase, your revenue will increase, your click-throughs will increase, and then you can start refining things. Then you can really start looking at, I have a page here that gets kind of like my third most amount of traffic. What if I refined that a little bit and I did some real deep technical SEO on that? Could I get that a little bit higher? Because the stuff I get from that, that's my highest value area. And so I'd like more value from that. But that comes after time and getting your analytics and kind of building stuff. So yeah.
And you'll go through some of the tools too, right?
Yeah, I'll touch a little more on the tools in a minute here. So awesome question, gang. And thank you. So as we start getting back into this mobile area, right, and these different ways of searching, you know, apps, these are refined search experiences. Very important that businesses have a frank conversation with themselves. Not all businesses need apps. Not every piece of content needs to exist in an app. And if you're going to build an app, it's an expensive proposition. You have to ask yourself, can you actually make sure that it will be found in the environment where it's going to be? App ecosystems tend to be a perfect exact match search experience. They're not as refined as a search engine where we can actually go and look at things that we think are related to a greater degree and build confidence that our guess is right. They're much more direct search oriented. So if people don't search on the right thing, you may not come forward. Makes it really difficult then to drive engagement with that app. And after spending thousands of dollars building it, you want engagement. So ask yourself right up front, what is the purpose of the app for my business? What does it actually do? Does it drive any meaningful value? Go through those conversations and understand then how to build the value that will make a difference in your bottom line. And if you want to understand what things are going to look like in the future and what matters in the future, watch children. Watch what they're doing right now with technology and how they're interacting with it. You know, I have a great experience this past weekend with a friend of mine. I was at his place and one of his sons came in and you know, he's like 11 years old and he's just riveted to the smartphone, the tablet, everything else. He actually doesn't watch much television, which, you know, if it were my mom, she'd think that was awesome that I was watching less TV. And in fact, he consumes everything through these tablets and these environments. And when you watch him play a game, even something as simple as Angry Birds, his ability to factor and figure out how things are going to go and what things would help and how to get that golden egg to get to the next level, it's incredible. I am insane, it turns out, because I keep trying the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. Not him. He just, everything is different every time, constantly trying different things, different movements, different combinations of movements. And he figures out so much more, so much faster. And so when you see kids taking these actions, you can start to build an understanding of what's likely to happen technology-wise in the future. Because as they get older, their expectations of technology will be very different from ours. We learned smartphones. They don't remember a time before smartphones. And that changes how they interact with things. Now, critical area for you guys is building efficiencies. I'm going to try to pick up the pace a little bit here and make sure that we've got some good time left over. We can get into our paid side and make sure we stay on top of this stuff for you guys. Building efficiencies. This is really important stuff, gang. This is actually a flow that I personally use for helping manage social media. Social media takes time. There's no question about that. But there's also ways for you to use these things, use tools that exist today to build efficiencies for yourself. It doesn't take out the personalization, but it does help automate some of the back-end work, the heavy lifting that has to happen. The point behind this is not to arm you with something you can use for social media, but to get you thinking about ways to use technologies to build efficiencies across your business areas. This could be as simple as a macro using in Word or Excel, or it could be something as complex as cron jobs on your server to manage and move content around at certain times into certain spaces. In this example, I actually use a platform called Hootsuite. I highly recommend it. I use the pro level version of it. It is a charge, it's $10 a month, but it is worth it if you are serious about managing social media. From there, I take RSS feeds from trusted sources, and that's critical. Trusted sources. That if you showed these to people, would you trust the information going out across them? Yes, I plug it into Hootsuite. Hootsuite will then send it out across Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn for me. So I guarantee you, while we were having this conversation, I'm live on the air, I've also been tweeting. That's my system in action. When I wrap up here, I'll go engage with people and talk to them and have conversations about what they've tweeted about. That's the critical factor here. You don't get to automate it and walk away from it. You have to engage with people. That's what builds your authority. But this will also then help. In my instance, what I use this for is I will take this information that's coming out of Twitter. As I put it into Twitter, I get a feedback from Twitter. I will put it into a tool called If This Then That. If This Then That is a life-changing tool. There's a number of them out there. That just happens to be the one that I use. But it literally says, if this action happens, then take this action. In my case, if I post something to Twitter, please take that and put it into this Evernote file. So everything that I tweet comes into my Evernote file. And then at the end of the week, I can go through that Evernote file and pick out 20, 30 of those links that I think are worthwhile and copy and paste them into my blog post and say, hey, here's great information that you should have been paying attention to this week and share that across my industry. So this is a way to streamline content creation in my case. In your case, streamlining may take a very different path, but it still pays dividends for you. For me, it saves time. For you, it could actually impact your bottom line. Now, conversion optimization. If you have not looked into this topic, it's critical that you look into this. I'm not going to spend a lot of time looking at this in depth, other than to tell you it's important. Conversion optimization is a way to understand how to get people to open their wallet more frequently or open it wider when they do open it. It pays direct dividends on email signups, on signups for different services you're looking for, whether it's lead generation, doesn't matter, and it pays big dividends in making sure people complete transactions with you and drive revenue. That is one of the biggest areas it'll work in. Please do not make the mistake of thinking that you're a conversion optimization expert unless you're actually a conversion optimization expert. The reason this exists is because it is a defined area of expertise, and you want to dig deep on this. This is one area you want to invest in, like usability. SEO, you can teach yourself SEO. You can learn the best practices. You can apply those. You can grow over time with it. Everyone can do that. You can do these same things with conversion optimization, or you can have an almost immediate impact on your bottom line revenue by hiring a consultant and doing the work that they advise for you. Really important. The most critical part of this is making sure your conversion path is well sorted out. A lot of businesses will fail at this. They'll inject a survey partway through, or they'll force me to log in when I just want to do one-time purchase with you and not have that affinity and force me to sign up with email and whatever else. You want to get past, you want to streamline it, and that's what conversion optimization will help you understand. And it works in real time with your products and your people, so you understand what works for you. Now, from here, we're going to touch a little bit on tools. Now, I'm going to give you some side-by-side comparisons here on the different webmaster tools. There's some from Google and there's some from Bing. In a lot of areas, we cover the same areas. These are important things. But as you start seeing these areas in orange or in red, depending on your screen tone, coming up, these are the areas that Bing offers tools that Google does not offer you. A couple of them I'm going to call out specifically. The SEO Reports and SEO Analyzer. If you have a verified account with Bing Webmaster Tools, and all of these accounts are free at both search engines, everyone should have these tools. We will run at Bing SEO reports for you every couple of weeks. So every 2 weeks, we'll run a report, we'll refresh it, we'll put it in your account. You just got to take a look at it and go do the work. And that will help with SEO. If you produce new content, you put it out today and you say, no, I don't want to wait for it. SEO Analyzer, an on-demand tool. You'll put the URL into SEO Analyzer. We will go immediately ping that page. We will take that page in, show an overlay of the work you need to do, and I will show you what the visualization looks like in a moment. It is fantastic. It is really helpful and really useful stuff. These are tools that my team built for doing SEO at MSN, so they are capable of great scale, and we've brought them forward through Webmaster Tools at Bing for you. Now, the final one I want to touch on here before we get into these actual visualizations of the tools is the Link Explorer. And I'll talk on this when we get in there, but the Link Explorer allows you to actually look up information related to your competition and who's linking to them. That is critical competitive intelligence information to know who is linking to your competition and which keywords they're using and which pages they're linking to and where those links are coming from. That can create a very vivid landscape for you to understand which businesses you may want to approach for partnerships, ask for links, or maybe even do some guest blogging for. Now, I'll walk you through these things quickly, gang. Now, the keyword research tool, I talked about this one earlier. This is the organic keyword research tool. Put your information in, select your time frame, we'll bring back related terms, we'll talk to you about the volume of keywords, put in multiples if you like, you can search by languages. It's fantastic. We've built it as a tool that can cover almost everybody's needs in almost every instance. So get in there, use it, and use this data to help make decisions for your business. Fetch's BingBot. This is an awesome one, particularly for anybody using a WordPress blog. This is a great way to look at something. If you come in here, you put a URL in, we are going to go, when you hit fetch, we will send BingBot to that URL to take a look at it. We will then come back and build a report, and it looks like this little page of code, this little code block that I have down here. That's what we will show you. We will show you the actual page code that we saw. And I bring up WordPress because WordPress gets hacked a lot. I have a WordPress blog, and it's still hacked, and they inject links in it all the time. You can't see them visually on the website when you visit it because they're sitting in the code in the background. And that's a problem because the search engine sees it, and then it makes me look bad. So when you look at your code in this situation, it's very easy to pick these things out, but you have to be familiar with your code. So spend time looking at that code. Understand what normal page code looks like, so when you run a report like this, you will know at a glance when something's wrong. That can help troubleshoot and cut down the amount of time it takes to troubleshoot by days in some cases. Now, Link Explorer, I touched on that one. You can come in here, tell us, here's my site that I want to look at. You can apply it to your own website if you like, but we have better reporting for inbound links that we know of for you in another area of the tools. This is really meant to go look at competing websites. Yahoo used to have this website or this actual product. They deprecated it last year, and we decided that it was valuable enough, we were going to build one ourselves. So we brought it back, made some updates to it, added some new features to it, put it out there. It's fantastic. It's a really great opportunity to understand the landscape you're competing with, especially where it talks about links, because links are important. They're a vote of confidence. So when a website votes for another website, we look at that as a signal of trust. And then we take a look and see, is the first website trustworthy? Is the second website trustworthy? And so on. So this can help you uncover maybe why your competition is outranking you. And this is a view of the SEO reporting I talked about. These are the reports that we run every couple of weeks in the background, and we just tell you, hey, you know, title tag doesn't exist here. It's a high severity item. You have 5 pages. This is on one of my own personal websites. I know what those pages are. I don't care about them. They're old. They're deprecated. However, I leave them out there, and that's fine. Image alt tags are empty in a lot of cases. But understanding SEO at a base level is important here because I don't, in fact, have 678 errors where I'm missing alt tag information on images, which could help me. In fact, I have some images on the website that are just visual spacers on my page. And it is an image, but I'm not going to put an alt tag on that. It's just there to make the visualization, the page outline of my page look good. So you have to be smart enough to know that, oh, in some of those instances, that's not really applicable. Because the tool cannot discern between an image you use to space in a template and an image that you're showcasing an apple in. Again, it's a blank hole. We really can't dig deep on it. So you have to do that work. Now, this is the SEO analyzer I mentioned where it will actually go fetch your page and we will put the overlay on it, put these little red dots or yellow dots or blue dots, depending on the severity. When you click on it, it will expand and explain to you what we're seeing and what action you should take. So these are a way for you to actually learn more about SEO if you want to do that as well. And I'm going to be wrapping up my section now. We're going to make sure that we get Stacy on deck here and we start really talking about SEO. So really the key takeaway that I want to leave you guys with is content is still extremely important. It is costly to invest in, but it's probably the wisest investment you can make. Usability is critical for your future success. And there are free tools available from the search engines out there that you really should be using because these tools can go a long way to helping you be more successful. Now, just before we wrap up here, I think we have a question pending. So we're going to wait for the question to magically appear for us. And then we can answer it.
Waiting.
We have one question. We know it's a single question. A lone question, if you will.
I think,
you know what I think it is? I think they're going to ask about Mardi Gras.
Ah. Yes. That's an excellent question.
Yes. It has nothing to do with the Pacific Northwest, but why not? Right?
Oh.
Okay.
This is just as good as Mardi Gras, though.
I know. Yeah. It's sexy, it's fun, it's entertaining. It is. I manage over 70 domains, and I can manage SEO for all of these sites together. Which suspiciously sounds like a statement.
Yes.
Not a question. However, we'll turn it into a question. Can I manage
can
SEO
I? Yes.
for all of these sites together? Yes. Yes, you can. You got to be careful with it, though. The reality is when you do this stuff, if you're running 70 domains, then there's a chance that you're going to be templating these things. And so you could put things in place that will have an impact across that template that will then be picked up across all these areas. You do have to be careful, though, because just the fact that you're telling me you have 70 domains and you want to approach this as a one-size-fits-all tells me that you're running templated websites, which means you're trying to have the similar look and feel across these, which probably means you have similar content aspirations, which means I'm probably going to deprecate a lot of those because we don't want to have, we want one website that's really good at that one topic. If, however, these are individual websites and they are discrete and you simply want to have a similar look and feel on them, you can manage that. They are focused on different topics, though, so you will have to build unique content for each one, and SEO needs to be applied to that content. At a template level, you can apply the same level of templating. An example would be if all 70 domains were WordPress installations, you could use a plugin like the Yoast SEO plugin. That's Y-O-A-S-T. You could use that plugin and then just fill in the blanks uniquely for each one of those domains as you work on them. The SEO work that's being done would be the same. However, the actual hands-on work for each individual would be discrete. Now, what was the language like schema.org that Duane said Facebook uses? It's called Open Graph. And it usually goes by the moniker OG, Original Gangsta. So you probably will see that, find that really funny, because I am so not an original gangster. But OG is the short form for it. It's called Open Graph. Facebook uses it. We will read it. What's really critical about these languages, though, is don't just use it because Facebook produced it. Because there's a lot available in schema.org that Facebook doesn't showcase. And so look at your business and understand which of these languages is the best to showcase your products and services. That's critical. Awesome. So I'm thinking now is a great time to transition to Stacy and bring on the SEM. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks so much, Duane. I think that was amazing, great content. So appreciate that.
Awesome.
So we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the paid search side, which is obviously very different from what Duane was talking about, more on the organic side. So let's just go through some of the things that I want to cover in my section, and it'll probably be about 20 minutes or so. We're just really kind of going to dip our toes into what SEM really is. So today, what I'm hoping you'll be able to walk away with is just the overall basics of search advertising. I want you to really understand the differences between what I'm talking about and what Duane talked about. And then I just want to make sure that everybody understands how to get started with a Bing Ads account. And then I can give you some of the resources that are available to you around Bing Ads. So I'll talk again about search advertising and marketing in general. What is Bing Ads? I'm not sure if everyone here is aware of what the Bing Ads platform is. I'll go through the creation of a Bing Ads account and actually setting up a campaign. So you'll actually see what it looks like in the interface, and you'll kind of understand what questions you'll be asked, what you should be prepared to enter. And then again, the help and support resources. So let's begin with just what is search engine marketing? Because I think Duane actually started off with what is SEO? So it's only appropriate. And I'll go through the famous anatomy of a search page, which I think we've actually been through before, but just to kind of refresh and make sure that we're all talking about the same thing and on the same page here. We want to make sure, so what Duane talked about was everything in blue. So, you know, entering a keyword and then having the organic results appear. And here you can see kind of a actually pretty robust paid search showing as well. So everything in orange is what I'll be talking about, which is a paid search opportunity. What you'll see, and actually before I kind of jump into everything here, I want to make sure that everybody is understanding the terminology that I'm going to use. So pay attention. These are really useful for the next time you're at a cocktail party and you want to pull out some of your coolest acronyms. I'll go through all of them right here. SEM, search engine marketing, different from SEO, which is the optimization piece. PPC, so it's pay per click. And that's one of the great advantages of search engine marketing is that you only pay when a user or a consumer actually clicks on your ad and shows some kind of interest or interaction with whatever it is that you're talking about in your advertising. So in a lot of other ways of advertising, particularly in the digital front, you pay for impressions, which is just the number of times that an ad is actually displayed. So in search engine marketing, and I think I'll cover this in a minute as well, your ad could appear 1,000 times. But if someone only clicks on it once, you only pay for that one click. It's a really, really important kind of metric to understand. So in terms of KPIs, there's also a number of acronyms you just need to be a little savvy about. And that's CTR, click-through rate, so obviously the amount of times that your ad is actually click-through versus how many times it's showed. The cost per click. So CPC is something that I'll refer to a number of times because CPC is actually how much you're paying per click. And everything that I'm going to talk about in the Bing Ads interface is an auction environment. So those of you who love eBay or just love auctions in general, this is right up your alley, right? So it's everybody is bidding for what they think their keyword is worth. Position talks about position and the actual page itself. So when we looked at the search page before and you saw that, you know, there were, I think, four of the search results in the kind of main line, and then off to the right rail, there were additional search results. So as an advertiser and marketer, you really want to understand where your ad is showing. And that position is indicated by how much you're willing to pay. So it depends upon the auction, depends upon how things are going for each individual keyword. And your position will vary pretty considerably based upon how much you would like to pay, the quality of your ad, how many clicks you've gotten in the past, those types of things. And then CPA is cost per acquisition. So an acquisition can be anything that you define it to be. I mean, it can be, if you just want to click through, then that can be your cost, your acquisition point. If you want to have someone sign up for a newsletter, you can actually make that your acquisition. A lot of people also, of course, would make it a purchase. So whatever your acquisition is what you can then put a value on and then determine mathematically how much you're paying for each, not only click to your website, but acquisition, however you define it. So moving on from here, let's just talk a little bit about why SEM is so fantastic. First and foremost, really low cost of entry. So you really get to set how much you want to pay. As I mentioned before, you really only pay for the clicks. So you get a lot of quote-unquote branding opportunities just by having your advertising show time and time again. So you don't have to pay for those impressions. You only pay when someone interacts. It's also a really, really flexible form of advertising. So this is something that, again, you know, if you think about other ways that you can promote your website, you know, it's kind of you have to set it out there and you may not be able to change on a dime or, you know, optimize in real time. And those are things that search advertising lets you do. So you can change your keywords and copy if you find that things aren't working for you. You can just tweak things. So if a certain piece of copy isn't working, I think Dwayne was referencing before the SUV versus sports utility vehicle and how that can really impact how someone interacts with your advertising or the text that you have on a search page. And that's really important in this advertising piece as well. So you can make that change really on the fly if it's something that you're realizing, you know, isn't getting the results that you'd like. And then control. So this kind of is kind of the overarching theme for all of search engine marketing in general, is it's really all about how you want to run your business. It really is about, you know, what kind of metrics do you deem the success or failure of your business. So you have complete and total control over what you want to put out there and then how much you want to actually put out there. So if your business is truly very seasonal, see, it's not something that you have to run 12 months out of the year. You can just kind of pick a specific time that is, you know, really advantageous to you and run your ads and, you know, get the most out of it right there. So
Stacey, before you move on, mm-hmm. I have a quick question for you. You mentioned the low cost of entry. What is the minimum bid? Because If I'm thinking of it correctly, it's pretty low.
It is.
Like, it can be really low.
It can be 5 cents.
Wow.
So that's a bargain if I've heard of one.
Absolutely.
I mean, I would pay 5 cents for it.
Absolutely.
For
now, it's not necessarily true that everyone gets a nickel
exactly.
as a click.
Exactly.
However, if you're smart about managing these things, you can work to drive your costs down.
Yep.
And the barrier to entry really is that low. You can be getting new customers for a quarter for, you know, 20 cents even.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
No, it's very true. And I don't want to, you know, say that you can actually get a ton of clicks for 5 cents. That would be incredible. So it is, again, an auction environment. And maybe perhaps if you have a very unique word and it's, you know, maybe you've got one searcher that happens to click on it, go for it. You got 5 cents and you got a new customer.
Yeah, but I think the point is that the marketing budgets are quite realistic.
Yes.
You can be very manageable
mm-hmm.
with marketing budget size and still be driving positive ROI.
Absolutely. And you can. There are so many tools out there, too, that can kind of help you filter your spend so you're not just, you know, spending all of your budget in a day or something like that. So we'll talk about that in a little bit, but it's just the overall flexibility is kind of unparalleled when it comes to just advertising in general.
Oh, absolutely. So. And you know what? We have a quick question for
sure.
you here, too. How do you avoid your competitors clicking on your ads and exhausting your budget?
Sneaky competitors.
It happens
you
sometimes.
Know, it's just not fun. But we do have a lot of controls in place around click fraud. So just like, you know, Dwayne, you talked about on, you know, making sure that everybody's authentic and mm-hmm. having as much kind of good quality traffic out there, we have the same kind of controls on the paid side. So it's, you know, we really do monitor. We try to make sure that, you know, if you're getting a number of clicks from a specific domain or something like that, we try to, you know, kind of nip that in the bud and not charge you for those. And then, of course, if you are suspecting that, you know, a competitor is sitting there late at night clicking on yeah. your ads, you can certainly contact us and we'll investigate it for you. So
yeah.
A number of things. And we actually just launched a site as well that kind of gives a little bit more transparency because mm-hmm. competitors and just click fraud in general is something that we've had that people have just kind of questioned in terms of the overall network. So
yep.
not just on Yahoo or Bing or even Google, but you know, what does the full network look like? And we've launched a site that gives you more information about that. So I'll talk about that in a minute too. All right. So getting back then into what is Bing Ads overall. So let's just kind of, again, level set and differentiate between Bing as the search engine, which is what we've been talking about so far, and the tool behind it. So the tool that actually hosts the auction that we've been referencing is called Bing Ads. So it's a platform. It's just like if anyone is familiar with Google, it's kind of the answer to Google AdWords is Bing Ads. It's free to sign up. I'll show you how to do that. You can, again, go through the budgeting. There's targeting options, all kinds of things, and I'll take you through that interface. But what I think is important to understand is that Bing Ads really does get you results over just a pretty extensive network of sites, and I've listed a few of them here. So through the Yahoo Bing search network, you're getting access to not just searchers that are answering or that are doing searches on Yahoo or Bing, but also searchers who, again, are on our partner sites. So here I talk about, you know, the Wall Street Journal, which is one of Microsoft's partners. So anytime that someone was on the, you know, say Wall Street Journal site, they do a search and they're looking at just general web search results, your ads could appear there as well. Same is true for Facebook, which not a lot of people understand. And I do want to differentiate between the Facebook Open Graph search, mm-hmm. which is very different from just the web searches. So if you think about how you use Facebook, you know, a lot of times you will be doing just a search for a person, that old high school flame, maybe the teacher that you disliked in high school or something like that. But, you know, you could also be doing a search for pizza in Seattle. And in those cases, what you can do is actually, that's when you get web search results. So when you're not really searching for a person or some kind of connection, and you're actually looking for a web search result, that's when your ads can appear through Bing Ads. And it's very easy to get access to all of these networks of sites. It's just a simple click of a button within the Bing Ads site, and I'll take you through kind of how that works in a minute. The other piece that I think is really important to understand is that Bing Ads is not just about desktop search. It's not just about Facebook search or Wall Street Journal search. It's about mobile, local, everything that Dwayne talked about as well. It's kind of ubiquitous, right? So particularly for smaller advertisers or, you know, advertisers who are just trying to start off and really want to kind of dip their toe in the water for searching in general, I'm just going to go back here real quick, is just the idea of local and making sure that your ads only appear to a very small radius. So again, if you're kind of a brick and mortar store, you really want to just show your ads to people who are within your zip code, it's really easy to do that within the Bing Ads interface. So you can also do radius targeting. So say, you know, I only want to have advertisers or people coming to my site within the next, you know, the next zip code over or something like that. That's also available through radius targeting. Additionally is the mobile piece. So as I think everybody probably understands, mobile is a huge piece of how we kind of consume information, how we do searches, how we kind of just operate in a daily, day-to-day basis. So search advertising is part of, is on mobile as well. You can see here from this stat, it's 67% more clicks have happened on mobile just since 2012 itself. If we could just kind of go back to my screen, I think that would be super helpful. Thank you. One of the things that I do want to be clear about as well, because if you are at all familiar with search advertising, there is Google has made a very conscious shift to kind of include all of their campaigns in one, so kind of blurring the lines a little bit between mobile and desktop search, tablet search, all of that. So it becomes a little bit more difficult on the Google platform to have to manage both of those separately. And what's happening is within the actual Microsoft side, you can go in and do a mobile-only campaign. So if you are interested in just marketing on mobile devices, it's possible just through a little click of a checkbox within Bing Ads. So very, very easy to do if you want to be that specific. Or same is true for, you know, if you want to exclude mobile. Again, if you really just want to do some testing, see how things are going, and you don't want to include mobile search, you can very easily uncheck that box. So in terms of what the actual audience looks like on Bing and who you're actually delivering your ads to, who's on our network, I just wanted to kind of point out the fact that we do have a number of searchers, 159 million unique searchers within the Yahoo Bing network. That works out to about 30% of the overall search share. So we, of course, would love for that to continue to grow, and we've made a number of strides in the last couple of years specifically. But it's important to point out that you're getting a really comprehensive audience when you're using the Yahoo Bing network through Bing Ads. And of that 159 million, 51 million of those searchers are exclusively using the Bing Ads network of sites to search. So people like me who, you know, just kind of use Bing every day, love it, just live it. I'm an evangelist. It's just, I dream about it. It's great. But these are the people that you're reaching when you're on the Bing Ads network. So 51 million people. And just to kind of put that in context a little bit, I think 47 million is the population of Spain. So when you think about it, you're getting an entire country's worth of people, of eyeballs, right at your fingertips just by going through the Yahoo Bing network and Bing Ads. So just something to think about as you're figuring out where to put your budget and all of that. So in the last couple minutes here, I'm going to take you through how you actually create a Bing Ads account, because it is really easy to do, and it is free to sign up. So I'm just going to go through a couple of screenshots because it's just too difficult to demo. But this is the screen that you'll come to if you go to bingads.microsoft.com. So click on that link or go to that link, and here's your beautiful sign-up screen. And the imagery that you'll see here isn't going to match what you'll see on the Bing app, or the Bing homepage, but it kind of represents the fact that everything within Bing is very, very visual, very rich, and just kind of pleasing to the eye and nice to look at. So if you don't already have a sign-in, you can very easily click on the sign-up link, which is in the upper right-hand corner. And if you do that, you'll come to this page, which is the only type of information we'll ask you in order to get started. So you simply choose your language, you pick a username and password, all kinds of just, you know, normal things that you would expect when you're actually signing up for an account. And then there's also this option for help. So if you do have any questions, there's live chat available. I'll go through some of the options for actually numbers that you can call, those types of things. And in addition to just signing up here, you can also elect to go through our Quick Launch program. And Quick Launch is something that's kind of is available to those advertisers who are willing to kind of put a budget for $500 or more each month. So it's pretty low cost of entry when you think about what your advertising budget could be over the course of 30 days. But this program, and I've included the phone number at the bottom here, is somewhere where you can just give them a call. They'll very easily kind of walk you through the process and set you up. They'll actually do some optimization for you right off the bat, help you figure out how to get set up, and making sure that all of your information is there and that you're ready to go. You're going to get clicks. You'll be able to see results pretty much instantaneously. And now let's just take a minute and go through how you would actually set up a campaign, because I feel like this is where a lot of people get tripped up. I can very easily enter my name and username and password, but gosh, how do I actually create an ad? How do I make this, you know, how do I make this real? How do I go about filling in all of these things that you're going to ask me about when it comes to, you know, setting up a campaign and thinking about advertising? It can be really overwhelming. So first and foremost, you just want to sit down and do some planning. And again, while at the onset, it probably seems really, really just too much to think about and just not something that you want to do, you know, on a typical day, it doesn't take that long. So if you just sit down and think about, you know, okay, who do I want to target? When I create my website, when I have that content available, who is the person that I really want to get in touch with? Who is the kind of optimal person that should be clicking on my ads? So you just think about, you know, is that someone specific? Does that person have to have red hair? Does that person have to live in a certain area? So on and so forth. So really just kind of hone in on who is your specific person. And then what's your purpose here? Is it all about, you know, I want to create revenue, or is it all about brand recognition? Would you rather just get, you know, a lot of impressions or a lot of eyeballs to your site? Do you just want them to kind of explore the content once they're there? Or do you want them to actually go through and, you know, create a transaction or, again, sign up for some kind of newsletter or something like that? And then what does your budget look like? You know, are you willing to spend $500 a month? What does everything kind of work out for you in terms of your overall marketing and budgeting in general?
So, Stacey, we have a couple questions pending here. Yeah, two questions, really. Okay. First off, is Bing in every country?
Bing is in a lot of countries.
I think it's, excuse me, a bit much to say it's in every country.
Yes.
But yeah, it is in many countries around the world. I actually can't remember the number, but I know it's higher than 50, I think.
Yeah, so, Bing Ads is in 52 countries.
Yeah. And then is the Bing Yahoo partnership, has that been extended to Europe at this point?
Yes. So the Bing Ad alliance that we have is, or the Yahoo Bing network, I should say, is in every country that we are live in. So, well, not every country, I should say. There are like pockets of places where Yahoo still exists in itself. But
exactly.
Overwhelming majority, Yahoo and Bing are kind of aligned.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, if there's a specific country that you have in mind that you have a question about, we can absolutely address that. But most countries, we're, you know, joined at the hip and aligned.
Oh, that's awesome.
All good things. And it's been really successful. We've seen a lot of great audiences and success just from the overall platform. So we've been really happy with that.
I'm such a fan of I personally use Yahoo Bing for my own websites. And the traffic that comes from them converts better than any other network. So I...
There you
go. The proof is in the using.
You heard it here first.
Try it. You'll see the difference.
Absolutely. So one of the great ways to see that difference is to set up your accounts. And in search advertising, it's a little bit different than probably any other kind of advertising that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Although if you are familiar with Google, which I don't, you know, want to discount that at all, it's extremely similar. So that's kind of the beauty of what we've done with Bing Ads is made sure that we can kind of very easily port someone from a platform that they're more familiar with into our platform because we are a little bit newer to the game.
Yeah.
So I'll just go through some of the account structure that we have. And first, you always want to start with your overall account. So in the example that I'll go through, this is actually a coffee shop. So let's just say I own the coffee shop, so I'm the account owner. And then right now, I just have a coffee shop on 4th Street. So I'm going to create a campaign that is all about 4th Coffee and in searching. And then underneath that campaign are a number of ad groups. So each ad group corresponds with a number of keywords and ads. So you can see here that, you know, within a coffee shop, I offer not only coffee, but tea, and then I also have a line of pastries. So it's important to make sure that my keywords and my ads line up to each line of business that I have. And of course, you know, this can change based on the content of your website or, you know, maybe you're not selling something specifically, but it's pretty easy to kind of map this back to how it would work for individual sites. So within each ad group, you know, if I have a coffee ad group, I'm going to have ads. Three ads per ad group is kind of the minimum that you would want. You can certainly have more than that, but three is kind of a recommended to get you started. And then, you know, as many keywords that are relevant. And I'll talk about keyword research in a minute, but really, really important to figure out, you know, what keywords you can use. You don't want to have too many. You don't want to have too few. There's a number of tools available for you to actually go out and get as many keywords as you could possibly want. So again, going back to that whole idea of planning, it really does take just 3 minutes. So let's just go through this really quickly. All you need to do is sit down with a piece of paper, think about your products and services. What do you offer? What's on your website? What kind of content do you have? And ultimately, you can even reuse a lot of the stuff that Duane talked about with keyword research there. So if you're already doing it on the content side, you can really easily kind of just translate that into products and services here. And then what are your differentiators? Have you won awards? Do you have a special going on? Is there some kind of sale? Why are you different from the coffee shop down the street? Why are you different from maybe a big brand coffee shop? What makes you unique? And why would people want to kind of visit your shop versus someone else's? And then more on the economic side, what is a lead really worth to you? You know, how much are you willing to pay to get somebody either into your store or to get somebody just onto your site in general? What is that worth to you? And that's going to be just a really unique question. And then again, what kind of monthly spend are you willing to dedicate to search within the Bing Ads network? So all these things, write them down, should take you 3 minutes. From there, you can really easily map these into different areas of the Bing Ads interface. So products and services, keywords. Differentiators becomes ad copy. What is a lead worth? That's your bid price. What are you willing to pay for each individual keyword? Monthly spend, what does that look like? And how are you going to set your budgets? So it really kind of just very easily translates everything into the Bing Ads interface, and you can fill it out, and I'll go through how you actually do that. But it's not quite as overwhelming when you break it down that way. So in terms of actually creating your campaign, I'm just going to go through a couple of screenshots, and then we can kind of wrap up here and have any additional questions. But you just go through, and these are the screens that will appear after you actually sign up for an account. You click on campaigns, you click create your campaign, and then you're taken to a screen that allows you to kind of enter more of the specifics. So what's your campaign name? In this case, since I'm a coffee company, I'm just going to name it Coffee Madness. Maybe that's the name of my company. And then you choose a time zone as to where you are. And this will help just the ads kind of figure out, you know, when the best times to show would be. If you're only an online presence, this isn't quite as important because you do have ways to target, I only want to appear during 9 to 5 in this time zone or what have you. So there are ways to kind of work on that. It just makes sense to put the time zone that's most relevant to you. And then it asks you for a budget. And you can do a daily budget or a monthly budget. And this is something, you know, that we talked about at the very beginning, was search advertising is really, really flexible in this way. So if you know that you only have $50 a day to spend in search advertising, you can very easily set that here. And that $50 is the maximum that we would charge you. And again, it's just based on how your keywords bid out and all of that. But you have complete control, and it's not like we will, you know, massively over deliver or something, and you'll end up with more charge than you need to have. You choose your language and any kind of locations that you want to include. So we're US focused today, but it could be more of an international focus. Then you work on your ad title, your text, and your URLs. So within your ad type, this is choosing just a text ad. And then you can actually go through and enter in, you know, what kind of ad title you have and what your text is. And you can see on the bottom there where it actually kind of mocks up for you what the ad will look like once you put it in. So it's super, super helpful to understand, you know, there are text limits. You can't just kind of have a run-on sentence forever. But this is how your ad will appear. So you can kind of type it in real time, and it will show up in the box, and you can understand how things will show up. You also have the option of a display URL and a destination URL. So obviously, these do not have to be the same. And you can use your display URL just to make it look a little bit prettier if that's something that you're interested in doing. So pretty straightforward when it comes to entering all of this kind of information. Next, you want to go through the keyword piece, so selecting the research that's available to you within keywords. So you can go ahead and just type in all the keywords that you have, or you can even upload all the keywords that you have, either from an existing campaign that perhaps is on another platform, or just even through like an Excel spreadsheet. You can upload as many keywords as you'd like, or you can just type them in. If you're a little stuck on the keyword piece, and you know you can only think of 10 keywords, and that's you're exhausted, you have no idea how many more you could possibly add, you can really quickly just click on this research link here, And it gives you an option to kind of, again, type in a word, and it will kind of extrapolate based on that and show you, here's some other keywords you might want to consider. And it's a really easy process of just clicking a box and adding them in, and it will just kind of seamlessly go through. The other way that you can do this is actually through Excel, and Dwayne mentioned this as well, is through the Excel add-in. And you can go download this add-in, and within Excel you can do the same types of things. It's just kind of on a grander scale, where you can go in and click and say, you know, coffee is my keyword, expand upon it. It will give you information like common CPCs, so common cost per click that advertisers are paying. It'll give you information about how many impressions these keywords have seen. All of that information is really important and interesting for you as an advertiser to understand what's worth going into your campaign. So super easy to add all of that. And then from there, you just figure out what your bids are. And you could see in that previous screen, if you wanted to, you could actually set it, you could go through and set it individually at each keyword, or you could set it at the actual ad group level. So, you know, I'll pay a dollar for each one of these types of keywords, so on and so forth. So really kind of flexible in terms of how you want to set your bids. And then from here, there's a number of different things, obviously, that you can go through, but just in terms of overall basic setup, these are the things that you really need to pay attention to and understand. So you just save all this information, talk about, you know, how you want to actually pay for it. So usually it's a credit card situation, and then you're off to the races and good to go. So from a support perspective, if you do get hung up on any of these, if you have questions about any of this, we absolutely are here to help you. There's a number of different ways to get in touch with us. So there's a phone support opportunity here. I do encourage you to go to advertise.bingads.microsoft.com. It's kind of the portal for everything that we could possibly give you in terms of information about advertising within Bing Ads. It gives you a ton of tutorials, tons of videos, all those types of things. There's also a chat opportunity within the actual tool itself of Bing Ads, and then within our advertise.bingads.microsoft.com site, which just rolls off the tongue. I can't imagine it being any easier to say. And then there's online forums as well, so lots of Bing Ads community, so people are blogging, people are talking about best practices that they've done, so on and so forth. And then again, just that quick launch number. So if it is something that you're willing to spend $500 a month or more on, feel free to call Quick Launch, and like I said, they'll get you started very quickly. So that kind of wraps up what I'm, you know, the overall kind of high-level view of search advertising. We didn't want to go too in-depth because it can get overwhelming very quickly, but that's just, you know, hey, if you want to get started today, you should be ready to go and you should be all set. A couple of other resources in addition to the ones that I just mentioned. Bing Webmaster Tools, this is what Dwayne went through, so the link here for you. Bing Ads, again, is just bingads.com. Getting Started is that link that I just mentioned before. And then there's training content and sales resources and insights. So if you happen to be a small agency or something and you're looking to get, you know, more information about, hey, how do I pitch this to my customers? There's all that types, those types of resources available to you there at the bingads.com site too. So with that, I'm all done.
Excellent.
I'm set.
Excellent. So we are a couple minutes ahead of time here, guys,
yeah.
And we do have a question pending. So the person is asking if HTML5 is focused or is really focused on mobile, and do the new markup and tags affect indexing and ranking of websites compared to older scenarios of regular HTML and so on. So I'm going to dive on that one.
Thank God.
And I know my place here, Stacey. Don't worry. The reality with this is, no, the tags in and of themselves are not going to affect anything. We would crawl that the same as we would crawl any other regular code that we would find. HTML5 does have the ability to help us understand a little more in terms of what your target is trying for. So you are trying to apply this to a mobile experience. You are trying to apply this to whether it's a smartphone or whatever. So, you know, that's kind of a nice thing. The reality, though, is the tags in and of themselves, it's not going to trip us up. It's not going to be a problem. I'll give you a perfect example in HTML5. There are actually multiple H1 tags. And H1 tags, you can think of an H1 as the headline on a newspaper. Okay. So war ends. That's the H1. So for the article you've written, it would be the title of the article. And you would wrap it in these little things called H1 tags to say this is a header. The reality with that is in HTML5, you use it as a styling element more. And so there are multiples on a page. Well, the typical best practice in SEO is only one H1 per page. So what we do as a search engine is we simply look at that and say, well, then we'll apply the first instance toward SEO, and we will assume the rest are for style, and we just ignore them. So then the webmaster doesn't have to worry about it. It's very straightforward. And I think this next one's actually for you. There's a question about Bing in Antarctica. My question for the questioner is, are you a penguin? What is a good average ROI for ad campaigns on Bing?
Well, I can honestly say, I don't think I've ever gotten
a
question about...
Do we serve penguins? I mean, really, we're not going to discriminate. We're going to take their credit card,
no,
too.
No, of course.
Absolutely.
Of course. So I don't believe that there is Bing ads in Antarctica specifically.
We could go and put a flag down there for you, though,
yeah,
if that would make you feel better. I mean, I know a lot of employees would go on that trip.
I'll put in that request. But as for now, I can't say that that's included in one of the 52 countries or even continents that we are in. To address that ROI question, though, it's impossible to answer, so you're not going to like me for kind of scooting around this
one.
You're
going to waffle on this one?
Yeah, I am.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Here's some syrup with your waffle.
It's impossible to say what kind of an average ROI is. It varies so much by vertical. So just to give you kind of an idea, we talked about the 5-cent minimum.
Yeah.
Lawyer terms or terms that are related to legal in general,
yep,
you can pay hundreds of dollars for
absolutely
a keyword. So, you know, but that could return hundreds of thousands of dollars for
exactly
you. So that ROI is obviously going to differ between, you know, widget number one, which
yep
could be more like a dollar.
Yeah.
So it's really impossible to tell. I would kind of encourage you to think about it as search marketing should be much more efficient than any other form of kind of online marketing. It should be one of the most efficient forms of online marketing that you have, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then
all
this
right
next one.
So yeah, shall I go for keywords I already know people come to my website for, or should I broaden my set of keywords? From an SEO perspective, from an organic perspective, what you want to do are focus on keywords that are aligned to content that you actually have. And so you want to stay aligned with what you have or produce more content and actually go after more keywords that way. From the paid search side, what do you think, Stacey?
You can be more broad, right?
Yeah.
So you can be a little bit more aspirational about what is on your site, but you still have to be relevant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm looking for a Coach purse and, you know, you sell maybe purses from Costco,
right,
probably not going to be the best way to kind of expand, and because people will obviously, they'll click on your link and then they will, you know, quickly click back. And we
right
look at that in terms of relevance and ranking and things like that. So
yep
just be aware of that. I mean, it's certainly something that you should expand upon. And if you, again, you know, have 20 keywords that are most relevant, you know, take it up to 45, but let's
yeah
not get crazy here.
Yeah. Before we get to more questions, guys, if you guys have questions, let us know. We've got time for like maybe one more question here. I do want to remind you guys, vote in the polls. We want to know what you guys are thinking.
Yeah.
We want the feedback on this. This is our first time in Bing mm-hmm ads and Bing Webmaster's first time doing this with the virtual group. So we definitely want your feedback. If you want more of this, let us know. Do the poll, complete that stuff, or, you know, hit us on Twitter even. Let us know. But those polls will really help for us. And we're coming into the final few seconds here. So we're going to actually do the magic today, and we'll give you guys back a little bit of time here. I do want to say thank you so much for your time this afternoon. The crew in the studio has been fantastic. This has been awesome content from Bing Ads. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.